U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
What has been admitted as 168, that's the jewelry we were discussing, right?
Yes, the jewelry was laid out, that was in the bag was laid out and photographed and documented for us.
And you have, remember I was asking you about hoop earrings and gold, and you said, well, gold metal looking things, right? There's a lot of gold metal looking things there.
We're always going to say yellow metal in our report. We can't value those things or determine right there on the spot that it's gold.
But it could be valued, right? I mean, it could
certainly.
Be. Okay.
Absolutely.
And I want to show you what's been admitted as States 167. Do you see those 4 what appear to be gold and silver coins?
Oh, yes, I see what you're talking about there. You're trying to show me the bag. Yes, I can see those.
And they're in plastic?
Yes.
And you don't know what they're worth or if it's solid gold or...
I have no idea.
Just so we're clear, in your officer's report, you describe that this is mostly cosmetic jewelry. Did you make that statement?
Yes, it's inaccurate. It's costume.
You mean that's what you meant? Not that that's costume jewelry?
No, I meant that it's mostly costume jewelry. Yes.
That's your opinion?
It was my opinion.
And just so I can go back to the shoes for a second, States Exhibit 52, do you see that Reebok shoe right behind Mr. Miller's leg?
Yes, it appears as though his left leg is actually on top of it.
And you see that those items I'm pointing to, that's what we were talking about with paramedics coming in and checking for pulse.
Right, that's the backside. They actually stick the sensors on, and then that's what they peeled off laying there.
Was there a cell phone associated with Michael Miller?
We determined that there was a cell phone at the residence that didn't belong to him.
By a person named Corey Thompson?
That sounds familiar, yes.
So you found a phone in Mr. Miller's room, but it was registered to a Corey Thompson?
Yes.
And without telling me what Corey Thompson said, you talked to him, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
And what you can tell us without saying anything he said is there was no connection between Corey Thompson and Michael Miller.
Not that he knew, no.
Except for the fact that his cell phone, Corey Thompson's cell phone, was found in Mr. Miller's possession.
Yes.
The life insurance that we've talked about, you've talked about, this was taken out by Sharon Randolph, correct?
It's signed, and the documents are signed by Sharon Randolph, so yes, I would assume she's taken out the policy.
And in order to get life insurance, you need to go through a medical, get blood, those kind of things, right?
I've heard advertisements where you don't have to, but yes, most of the time you do.
You have no reason to believe that didn't occur in this case?
I have no reason not to believe that.
Okay. And so this is life insurance that Sharon Randolph has gotten so that she could protect her loved ones, right?
I would assume that.
And I noticed that the date on this insurance, a lot of it was 2006, right?
Yes.
A couple of years before.
Yes.
It wasn't 2 months before the incident or a month before the incident, right?
Correct.
And at least one of them, that we don't have the policy, as you point out, but she was actually having her wages, money was taken out of her wages to pay for the premium.
Yes.
You found strong opioid medicine connected to Mr. Randolph, his prescriptions. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And you had a discussion with Mr. Randolph about how potentially strong they were. Do you remember that?
Yes.
These are strong medications, as you're aware, right?
Correct.
They have effects upon people, don't they?
Certainly.
When you went and said, you told the jury words to the effect of, I was there to keep the peace while Colleen moved into the house that had been shared by Sharon and Tommy. Were you in a uniform?
No, and she was there to have the locks changed that the agreement had occurred between the attorneys.
Mr. Randolph had numerous belongings in that house, didn't he?
I'm certain.
Including he had a Harley Davidson in the shed, didn't he?
Yes.
And he told you that he was going to go in and he was going to get his belongings, right?
Yes.
And you told him that's not happening, right?
I did.
You had absolutely no court order. You had absolute, what authority, strike that. When you did that, he has a right to his belongings, does he not, sir?
At that point, nothing was to leave the house because that's what had been agreed upon between the attorneys on both sides.
There was no court order that he couldn't take his belongings.
Didn't see a court order, no.
So you were just deciding as a homicide detective that man wouldn't be allowed, Mr. Randolph wouldn't be allowed to take his belongings that day when he showed up, right?
On that day, no.
After that, Mr. Randolph makes claims, right? I saw that he made claims for insurance, right? Do you remember? That it's not right away, a month, two later, correct?
Yes.
There was a conversation about Thomas Randolph on the 911 call saying Mike had been ripping him off. Do you remember that?
Yes, very early on in the call.
And do you recall that he was questioned, Mr. Randolph was questioned about that, the very, you know, within hours about what he meant by that. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And do you recall that, and I am looking at the 5-9 statement, page 60, counsel. Do you recall that Thomas Randolph clarified and said, what I was saying on the 911, what I was probably referring to is he was ripping me off the act right then. He was ripping us off right then. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Fire extinguisher. You have talked about this fire extinguisher, have you not?
Yes.
Okay. And there was a statement that the fire extinguisher was on top of the refrigerator, right? Do you remember this?
That Mr. Randolph said that the fire extinguisher fell off of the refrigerator.
And you told the ladies and gentlemen of the jury that you looked up there and there was no dust mark or something that you thought should be there. Fair?
Correct.
Could we look at a picture of that?
Of the lack of the dust ring? No, I didn't
have the top of that refrigerator looking down so we could see what you were saying?
No.
So you found this important, yet we don't have a single picture of it, do we?
No.
What was below that refrigerator, sir?
A carpet. Semicircle carpet.
And you looked at the top of the refrigerator, things were sort of disheveled. Do you recall that?
There was an oscillating fan that was on top of a crock pot. That would be out of place.
And Mr. Miller was laying right against that fridge, right?
Yes, his left shoulder was against the fridge.
And in fact, the fridge was dented, was it not?
Dented.
Yes, it was dented. Did you see a dent in the fridge right by Mr. Miller's body?
No, I didn't see a dent.
Did you look for one?
Did I look for a dent?
Yes, sir.
Not in particular.
Because if there's a dent in the fridge, that means something hit it pretty hard, right? To dent a fridge.
Certainly.
And you didn't notice it?
No, I didn't see a dent. I didn't make note of a dent.
And there was, you noted a mark on the bottom or on some part of that fire extinguisher showing that there was sort of like a dent or some type of defect.
Yes, on the edge of the bottom edge of the fire extinguisher, there was a flat portion where it appeared to have struck possibly a concrete surface.
And you pointed out to the jury that there was a screw to the left. If I'm looking at the refrigerator to the left, there was a single screw.
Yes.
After Sharon's death, you can see with records, banking records, that Thomas Randolph was having to take money out of credit cards or use credit cards. He's trying to survive, right? You see that?
I don't know the purposes for him with his finances. I have no idea.
Did you look for a bike?
Yes, we did.
In the area?
Yes, we did.
Because you wanted to know how Michael Miller could have gotten away?
Because we wanted to know how he got there in the first place. Based on Mr. Randolph said that Mike would often come over to the house on a bicycle, so we looked to see if there was a bike anywhere.
But you didn't find one, did you?
No, we didn't.
So So you were concerned about who could be a getaway driver, right?
I didn't think about a getaway driver. No.
What was Mr. Miller's girlfriend's vehicle type?
I don't know.
During the interview that we heard just now, you saw Thomas Randolph answer his phone and talk with Colleen.
I heard him say that he would call. He said Colleen and he would call her back.
You learned that Sharon Randolph had provided stuff, things, to Michael Miller, right?
Yes.
She was kind to him, right?
Yes.
Lastly, Thomas Randolph said that Sharon's problem, if she had one, was that she gambled too much, right? He said that to you.
Yes.
He said that his problem is he's cocky. Do you remember him, Thomas Randolph, saying about his own problem that he's cocky? You remember him saying that?
I remember him saying too cocky.
Too cocky.
Yes.
And he said that Michael Miller didn't have a steady job. That was his problem, right?
Yes.
Of course it wasn't. That concludes cross-examination.
I proceed?
Yes.
Thank you so much. All right. Well, that's a lot of things to cover. I'm going to try to do the best I can to track it. Okay, Detective. At the very beginning of cross-examination, there were some questions about Bartlett, remember, and the 911 call and the timing. Do you remember all that?
I do.
Okay. There was some talk about collecting, you know, reviewing the phone records and seeing Bartlett called at 8:33. Do you remember that?
8:33:36.
Okay. How long was the length of that phone call?
About 4.5 minutes. 270 seconds.
So exactly 4 minutes and 30 seconds, correct?
Yes.
If you add 4 minutes to 8:33, what do you get?
About 8:38.
Okay. So if you add the 4.5 minutes, you get to 8:38, right?
Yes.
That is not 8:45, correct?
It is not. 7 minutes shy.
But that's when the 911 call happens, right?
Correct.
Speaking of records, you also collected phone records, Vonage records for the defendant, correct?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And they were included in records you submitted to our office, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Also, in relation to kind of the gun, there were some questions about the timing of these gunshots. The defendant said he didn't hear those shots because he was hard of hearing, correct?
Yes, and he had the radio turned up loud inside the Hyundai Tucson as he was parking.
Did you or someone else ever take a step inside that vehicle to hear the sound in the car?
Detective Mogg did.
Okay, was it abnormally loud?
No, he noted that the radio was being played at normal volume or reasonable volume.
Okay, so there were questions on cross-examination about a gunshot wound, a penetrating gunshot wound. Do you remember that?
I do.
Okay, so you weren't here for the testimony of Dr. Gavin, correct?
No, I was not.
So you didn't hear necessarily the manner in which he ordered or numbered the shots, correct?
No, I wasn't.
And when I say order, I just mean like the order of the shots as she examined them, not necessarily the sequence, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
She examined the wounds, not the shots in the same.
You're right. So my apologies. Publishing Exhibit 330. I probably could just turn off the light, couldn't I? I knew how to turn off the light. But this one? Oh, look at that. Okay, great. All right. So, looking at gunshot wound number 4, do you see that there?
I do.
It's your understanding that one came through on the left side of his body, right?
On the left side of his chest.
And it's a penetrating one, meaning it didn't exit out of his body, correct?
No, it was recovered on his right back, above the hip.
Okay, so that one is on the left side.
Correct.
And with respect to this shot here, the one that you've seen probably, you're probably there when the trajectory rods were being done, remember
yes.
that? That one also is on the left-hand side, correct?
Yes.
Okay. This second shot... your understanding is that second shot at the head also starts at the left-hand side, right? Up near the top of the head.
It does.
And it goes downwards, is that right?
Correct.
But it's also on the left.
Yes.
And then the fifth one, the one that enters the back of the elbow, that's also on the left-hand side of the body, right?
Yes, it's the back of the elbow and it exits the forearm.
So four of those are on the left. And then the only other shot... that's actually not on the left side, is at least marked as number 3. You remember one that enters kind of near the left side, near the abdomen, and then goes straight up, and then kind of comes out near, I don't know, near the collarbone-ish area here, right on the right side.
Exactly. That's the one I thought Mr. Orm was talking about when we were discussing it, is that shot.
Okay. So just to be clear, four of them from the left side, one of them in the middle, but that's number 3, correct?
Correct.
There were questions about soot stippling. Do you remember that?
I do.
And there was talk about clothing and skin and whether stippling shows up on skin versus clothing, things of that nature. Do you remember that?
Correct.
Okay. You had said you wouldn't expect there to be stippling present on his abdomen. Why was that again?
Because he had a thick hooded sweatshirt on, and then he had that white Henley T-shirt on underneath, which was also thicker.
And essentially the hot powder, if it touches your exposed skin, that's what leaves the burn.
It's actually, stippling is the high velocity unburnt powder that's actually leaving little small contusions. It's leaving marks on there because it hits the skin so hard.
Okay. But as far as, you wouldn't expect it on clothing in terms of stippling because you're just going to see, what, defects in the clothing?
Possibly.
Let me ask you about gunshot residue. Is that a specific type of test or just more of a generalized test?
It's a generalized test. It'll take a swipe, and then you can either have it tested or not.
And what is that supposed to catch if you're just in an area when gun residue is kind of floating in the air?
Absolutely. If you're in an enclosed car and someone fires a gun, you're going to have gunshot residue on you.
And just to be clear, I mean, you were there at the walkthrough, right?
Yes.
And the defendant says he shoots him when he's squared up on him in that hallway, right?
Yes.
And during interview number 1, I think he even indicates he was 3 feet or less from him.
Yes.
There were questions on cross-examination. Do you remember where he said, you know, the defendant, you know, he said he shot him while in the garage or nearby the garage. Do you remember those questions on cross?
I do.
Okay. When you went to the walkthrough, how is the defendant gesturing he shot him while kind of in the garage? Where is he aiming at that point during the walkthrough? What do you remember the defendant saying?
At Michael Miller's head in response to the loud noise that scared him.
Okay. So... does the defendant indicate that when he is shooting him, Miller is on the ground?
Yes.
And he also talks about, oh, I got scared because of the fire extinguisher, right? It caused him to go bam, bam, right?
Because of the loud noise that scared him.
And just to be clear, what direction is Miller's feet pointing?
His feet are to the west, and his head is to the east in the garage.
So his head is near the car, right?
Yes.
Like the front hood of the car, and his feet are going back towards Sharon, right?
And his feet are going back towards where the water heater is on the west side of the garage.
Okay. And where is Mr. Randolph saying he is positioned? Where is he? What body part of Mr. Miller is he closest to?
He'd be closest to his head.
Well,
the midsection.
Well, doesn't he say he's standing by his feet by the lip of the door? Doesn't he lean down and do this?
He stands in the threshold and fires. He said bam bam each time.
Okay, so Mr. Miller's feet, based on that walkthrough, are closest to Mr. Randolph.
It'd be,
and he's leaning down and he's shooting towards his head.
Yeah, it'd be just based on where he is in relation to the door frame. He could be, say, towards the back of his legs.
And this second gunshot starts at the top of his head.
Yes.
Which is closest to the front fender of the car.
Yes.
His head is opposite of his feet.
Yes.
And Mr. Randolph is standing by his feet.
Yes.
And that bullet is traveling back towards his feet.
Yes.
This one, number one, enters the left side of his head.
Yes.
And it's going across his head.
Yes, across and upward.
And upward. But Mr. Randolph says he's standing essentially right at the lip of the hallway into the garage.
Right at the threshold, yes.
But that gunshot is going from left to right.
Yes.
He's back behind the feet.
Yes.
And that is the area in the garage that he says he shoots this man.
Yes.
You were questioned about the fact you didn't interview a Mr. Hogue, is that correct?
Yes.
However, you did speak to 60 witnesses, correct?
Approximately, yes.
You subpoenaed bank records?
Yes.
You subpoenaed phone records?
Yes.
You subpoenaed gaming records?
Yes.
You collected surveillance video?
Yes, we did.
From a gas station and a casino?
Yes.
You also interviewed the defendant twice and did a walkthrough with him?
Yes.
There were questions on cross-examination about the garage light. Do you remember that on cross-examination?
Yes.
Do you remember counsel talking about how the defendant said that Mr. Miller pushed the garage door? Do you remember that?
That he thought he was going for the garage door opener.
And that was kind of my point. The defendant never said that Miller successfully opened the garage door, only that he was trying to.
Yes.
Because in order to turn that light on, you'd actually have to make contact with the garage.
Yes, you do. It's like a doorbell switch, and he had it mounted on the inside of the hallway.
And the defendant was interviewed not once, not twice, essentially three times, if you include the walkthrough.
Yes.
At no point does he say that Mr. Miller successfully touched the garage door, causing it to open.
No.
And then there were questions about the fact that the defendant said that when he kind of re-entered the house going into the hall, that he touched that light a second time after the garage door closed. Do you remember being asked that on cross?
Yes, when he first sees Sharon in the hallway.
And that's said during the walkthrough, isn't that right?
Yes.
And does he say that right?
Leading.
Okay. When does the defendant say he touched the garage light?
Right after he came in and saw Sharon laying there, he thought to maybe go get a neighbor, and he pushed He opened it and then closed it right then.
At this point in time in which he's describing this, has he encountered Mr. Miller at all?
No, it's right when he spotted Sharon on the floor.
So right when he walks in?
Yes.
So seconds after closing the garage door, he's now touching it a second time?
Yes.
So a matter of seconds?
Yes.
There were questions on cross-examination. Do you recall defense counsel asking you, and the defendant said he trusted Mr. Miller. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Did he also refer to him as a bum?
Yes, he said it several times.
Did he also say this guy couldn't work to save his life?
Yes.
Yet he continued to hire him?
Yes.
And continued to pay him?
I presume so, yes.
For months?
Yes.
There were questions about the defendant saying he didn't think Mr. Miller had a drug problem. Do you remember that? In an interview, he says, I don't think he had a drug problem. He drank.
No, yeah, initially, I think he was confused about the question because he initially said, yes, he had a problem with drugs. And then he said he was talking about his drinking.
Okay, because he made the comment of he's black and he's buying a 40.
Right.
And then clarifies, I don't think he had a drug problem.
Yes.
Okay. You said you didn't review the talks, is that right?
I never received it. Okay. I checked the file even recently and I don't have it.
So if the medical examiner testified that it was only a metabolite of cocaine, you wouldn't have any reason.
Objection, hearsay.
It's no different than how they've phrased this with respect to the medical examiner the last time. Okay. So since you weren't here for the medical examiner, if the medical examiner said it was only a metabolite of cocaine, you wouldn't have any reason to disagree with that.
No.
Do you remember there were questions about the cell phone that's sitting on Sharon's dead body?
The house phone, yes.
The house phone that's sitting on her dead body. Remember that?
Yes.
And there was this conversation about 9114. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. Just to be clear, the defendant said he successfully calls 911, right?
Yes.
His discussion about being unsuccessful reaching 911 is prior to the last successful 911 call, right?
Yes.
And when the phone, the picture of her on her body is being taken, it's after all this is over, right?
Yes, and it stays connected all the way after.
So that's the condition of the phone after the last successful 911 call.
Yes.
I mean, Detective, in your years of experience using handheld telephones, have you ever nudged just a button while on the phone before?
Certainly.
It didn't turn off your phone, right?
I've actually activated buttons with my face sometimes, yes.
Okay. And we've heard the 911 call, right?
Yes.
And it goes for 18 minutes, right?
Yes.
Until finally someone from Washington turns it off.
Right.
Do you remember some questions about, it appears as when you looked at the scene, it appeared as if someone went through the drawers. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I think there was a question that was posed to you, like you've had some experience with people getting caught red-handed in the middle of kind of committing a burglary or something like that.
Yes.
Just to be clear, when you review the scene in those bags, it's lots of jewelry, right?
Yes, there was.
Okay. The defendant told you and your fellow officers that Miller was aware that he and Sharon were gone the week before up in Utah, right?
Yes. They'd just gotten back.
And did the defendant also say in his interviews that Miller knew that the night or the day after May 8th, they were leaving town to go back up to Utah?
Yes. Mr. Randolph even said that was the purpose of stopping at Funny's to top off the tank so they could leave in the morning.
At any point in time, during any of the three interviews, did the defendant say that he and Sharon took all of the jewelry inside the house and took it up to Utah the week before May 8th?
No.
At any point in time, during any of the three interviews, we'll include the walkthrough in that interview, did the defendant ever say, we plan to take all of the jewelry after May 8th up with us to Utah?
No.
So the jewelry, according to the defendant, still remained in the house before May 8th and after May 8th.
Yes.
But he had told Mr. Miller we're going to be gone during those two time periods.
Yes.
I have another question, though. Did the defendant tell you during these three interviews, or at least at some point during the three interviews, that Sharon was up in Utah the week before May 8th?
Yes.
Did the defendant tell you at some point in these three interviews that Sharon planned to leave to go back up to Utah after May 8th?
Yes.
So May 8th was the day that she was in town?
Yes.
Do you remember there being a question on cross-examination about the 911 call and the fact that the defendant offered to help? Do you remember a question like that?
Yes.
Do you remember also being asked kind of a follow-up question that later on, I believe it's in interview number two, that the defendant expresses to police that he's upset at the thought of his wife sitting on that cold floor? Do you remember those questions?
I do.
When you listen to the 911 call, does the defendant, when the fire department is asking him to provide CPR on his wife who's suffering from a gunshot wound, does he suggest or offer the idea, maybe I should go get the gun nearby Miller?
Yes, he did.
Does he, in fact, leave his wife instead of doing CPR at that point in time to go retrieve a gun?
Yes, just after 3 minutes in the call.
When he returns, when they are again asking to perform CPR, does he then offer, maybe I should go and lock the door. I'm going to go lock the door. Does he say that?
Yes, he did.
And essentially he stops doing, he doesn't do CPR and goes again for a second time, leaving his wife to go lock a door.
Yes, at about 3:51 in the call.
And then when he finally returns, and again, they're asking him to, you need to perform CPR. Does he offer the suggestion, well, how about if I go open the front door right now? Do you remember that?
He didn't specify front door.
Okay.
He said the door. Yes, and that was just prior to starting compressions at 6 minutes and 30 seconds.
And the fire department tells him, no, you need to do this.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, 6 minutes have elapsed at this point.
Over 6 minutes, yes.
Do you remember there being a part of cross-examination where defense counsel asked you, well, the defendant said while he was in the house, he could see Miller. I think it might have been in reference to interview number one. Do you remember that?
Interview number one, he said he propped open the door so he could keep an eye on Miller, yes.
Okay. But when you look at that, what is the context in which in that interview, when does he say he opens up the door so he can see Miller?
He just said, I can see him. He's on the floor.
But does he also say, and it's...
referring to page 35.
What statement, counsel?
First statement. So, would it help refresh your recollection to see a copy of the first interview?
Certainly.
Okay. So,
bottom of page 35.
Start with this question here, and it's in the middle, counsel. Start with this question here, and I want you to read this question and answer and this question and answer. And let me know if that refreshes your memory of the context of how he's able to see Mr. Miller. Okay.
During that interview, does Detective Mogg ask him what he did after he fired multiple shots at Miller?
Yes.
What does he say he does?
He said that he slid the carpet underneath the door and propped the door open.
And he said so he would be able to see what was happening.
Yes.
So just to be clear, in that portion of the interview, this is after he has completed shooting at Miller entirely.
Yes.
Hallway as well as garage.
Said after those two shots, yes.
Okay, then he props the door open.
Yes.
It's in the aftermath.
Correct.
Do you remember there being a number of questions about the ski mask?
Yes.
There were some questions about sitting. You've had a chance to see that ski mask, right?
Yes, I have.
And you've been doing this for how many years as an officer?
At that point, I'd been in homicide for 5 years and been on the department for quite a bit longer than that.
Okay. You've seen clothing that's been shot by bullets, right?
Yes.
Did that ski mask have a single bullet hole in it?
No.
Did it have any apparent blood in it?
No, it did not.
Was there any blood transfer somewhere around the ski mask?
No, there was not.
Despite the fact there may have been some, I don't know, some like stitching or whatever, you don't see any bullet holes?
No.
I would imagine you checked, though, right?
Yes, we did.
That would be a big deal, right?
Yes. A crime scene analyst with gloves on examined the ski mask, and there was no blood on the ground when the mask was picked up as well.
When he is interviewed these two times, as well as during the walkthrough, he does indicate that the mask is on his head. Maybe rolled up, but it's on his head, right?
Yes.
There was a question. Remember a question of, hey, you know, one reason you might want to take your mask off would be because maybe it's twisted and you can't see. Do you remember a question like that on cross?
Yes.
Detective, could another possibility to take your mask off is there's no reason anymore to hide your identity?
Correct.
Because the job is done?
Yes.
Do you remember there being a question about, detective, you would agree that one way to kind of leave a gun at a scene, or like not to leave evidence behind, is to leave a gun at a scene. Do you remember that question?
Yes, to get rid of the murder weapon.
Okay. Detective, wouldn't you agree another possible reason?
Objection, leading.
I don't think even what I've said even suggests an answer.
Well, I don't know what the question is, so I'm going to let you finish it.
Okay. Detective, would one possible explanation for dropping a gun would be your target is taken care of?
Yes.
Did the defendant in any of these three interviews with the police ever say that Michael Miller was waiting gun pointed the moment he walked into the hallway?
No.
There was a lot of questions about the second safe. Do you remember that?
I do.
At any point in time in these three interviews, did Mr. Randolph ever report to you that anything was taken out of that second safe?
No.
Do you recall questions about the walkthrough and the defendant's droopy eyes at the beginning of the video?
I do.
I know that you acknowledged that his eyes were droopy at the beginning. Did you see the same level of droopiness throughout the interview?
No, I didn't. Only when Don Bell put the camera up on his shoulder to do the intro.
Do you ever recall the defendant crying or weeping during the walkthrough?
No.
Do you ever recall any moment where the defendant needed to emotionally collect himself from recounting what happened to his wife?
Not at all.
Do you recall whether or not the defendant said when talking about Sharon, it was the grossest thing he'd ever seen in his life?
I do remember that.
And do you recall whether or not when discussing Sharon supposedly leaving shoes, him kind of slapping the wall and saying, motherfuck Sharon, Jesus, something like that?
Yes.
This is 1 week after she's passed.
Yes.
There was questions about, do you remember counsel asking you that Mr. Randolph had indicated to some extent he had a belief that Mr. Miller had committed some type of robbery? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Okay. Just to be clear, did the defendant indicate that he thought that robbery might have happened when Miller was a kid?
Yes.
And that he just happened to be standing in a store when his brother did the robbery?
Yes.
And then I think you even asked him as an adult, Mr. Randolph, are you aware of any robberies? And he says, no, I don't think so.
Yes.
And you did do a review. He didn't have any arrests here in Las Vegas?
No, he did not have an ID number. He's never been arrested in Las Vegas.
there were questions about the walkthrough and bringing in Randy McPhail. Do you remember that? There were a number of questions on that topic. Do you remember?
Yes.
You were asked, or maybe you provided an answer saying, you brought him in because you noticed that the spatter marks that McPhail looked at appeared to be distinctive.
Yes.
Do you remember? So you were there, kind of obviously, the night of, and then kind of a week later. Did it look the same, that area, that particular area?
No, it didn't. Again, over time, those marks had kind of spread out and became very distinctive. When we turned on the light in the hallway, you could just see them light up in the reflection of the hallway light. And so they were very distinctive at that point in time. And so I had called for a crime scene analyst to come out and document them, because you could clearly see them then.
If you had seen them on the night of, would you have had them marked?
Well, we did. There's a certain extent. We had the impact that we had documented, the bullet fragments that had gone up onto the planter shelf, the tissue, the hair, all those things we had documented and retrieved. But the smaller areas of is going to be cerebral spinal fluid, which is kind of an oily type substance, had really become distinctive on the wall, and I wanted to document them.
So that's kind of the point I wanted to get to. So those two fragments, right, and the strike, that's in the area where that cerebral fluid is.
Yes, the strike is about 8 feet up. Yes.
So that was an area you literally were processing on that night.
Yes.
Okay. And you just observed at a later time it became more pronounced, so then you brought someone in to do further documentation.
Correct.
There were questions, though, about a cleaning crew then coming in, though, after the night of these killings. Do you remember that?
Right.
I think there was a question about carpet had been removed, correct?
Yes.
But the spatters remained.
Yes, they did.
So this cleaning crew didn't wipe any of that up?
No.
Was the bullet strike repaired by the cleaning crew?
No.
So that even remained a week later, despite there being a cleaning crew?
Yes.
You were asked a question of, you would presume the walls were wiped down. I think you answered yes to the question, correct?
Yes.
Okay, but you weren't fair, to be fair, you weren't there, right?
No, I just know the lower portions where there was blood on the door, jam blood on the door, those areas had been wiped down.
Okay, so those lower areas were.
Certainly.
Right? But the upper areas apparently weren't, because you processed it, right?
Correct.
And just to be clear, in the hallway, did you observe any blood in that hallway on night one?
Yes. Okay. Sharon Randolph's blood.
Sharon, okay, I'm sorry. In the area where Mr. Randolph says he shot Mr. Miller, do you see any blood there?
No blood.
And you were not alone when you did the walk of that area?
Correct. No.
How many people were with you?
There's Sergeant Albee, Detective Mogg, Detective Hardy, Detective Long, Jeff Smith, the senior crime scene analyst, Gary Reed, the crime scene analyst supervisor, initially to look, and then it was later processed with fewer people.
Detective, if you and your fellow detectives or CSAs noticed something on night one in that portion of the hallway, would you have documented it?
Certainly.
There were questions. You remember questions about the clothing items and the sneakers nearby Mr. Miller's body?
Yes.
What was on Mr. Miller's feet that night?
A pair of size 9D cowboy boots.
This is presumably it's a jewelry heist. He's wearing cowboy boots.
Yes.
He had sneakers with him, but he opted for cowboy boots?
Yes.
Regarding the life insurance, you were asked that the documents were signed by Mrs. Randolph, and you indicated in the affirmative, correct?
Yes.
Okay. But you weren't present when those documents are being signed, correct?
No, I wasn't.
So do you know who, in fact, prepared, filled out all the paperwork?
No, I don't.
Okay. The paperwork was signed in Utah. Is that right?
Yes, in Ogden, Utah.
Where Mr. Randolph's family is from?
Yes.
Judge, I object to continuous being.
Okay, I'll rephrase. What year were those policies signed in?
I believe in 2006.
Okay, was that before or after she was legally married?
before?
There was a question about, and you learned wages paid for, Sharon's wages paid for the premium. Did that apply to the Boston Mutual policy only?
Yes.
Okay. And that's the $22,000 one, correct?
Correct.
That did not include the $200,000 or the $100,000 policy?
No.
Or the $10,000 Stonebridge?
No.
There were questions about the fire extinguisher. Do you recall being asked how Mr. Miller's body was lying next to the fridge?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall the defendant saying during his walkthrough that he, in fact, rolled him over into that position?
Yes, and you could tell based on the blood pooling that he had moved to the new position.
There were questions about his girlfriend, Mr. Miller's girlfriend, having a vehicle, something along those lines. During your investigation, was there any reported undeclared vehicle sitting outside the Rancho Santa Fe residence?
No.
And there were questions at the end about Sharon, defendant saying, about talking about shortcomings. Sharon's gambling, he's too cocky. And then I think the last question was that Miller didn't have a steady job. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Do you recall the answer wasn't that, but in fact, simply, he didn't work?
Yes.
Page 48, counsel. Courts and don't. I have no further questions for this witness.
Yes.
Detective, just so it's clear, in his very first statement, recorded statement, on May 9th, starting in 12:30 a.m., he is asked, do you fire any shots in the garage? And he answers, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
So there's, page 56, it's the last question.
And it's interview number one.
That's correct. Okay. Let me let them get there, okay?
Page 19,
you said? No, page 56.
I'm sorry.
The very last question and answer.
Okay.
Okay. And so, just so they're there by now. He said, yeah, yeah, when asked, did you fire any shots in that garage?
Right? Yes.
So within hours of this incident, it's fair to say that Thomas Randolph is saying, I fired shots in that garage. Right?
Yes.
Mr. Hamner asked you about the fact that Sharon and Tommy had been away to Utah for the week before, right?
Yes.
And that although they were celebrating Mother's Day at the charcoal room, they were again going to Utah, right?
Yes.
And you were aware, or at least you understood, that Thomas Randolph was going to deposit, had some money, was going to deposit some money in the bank, right?
That's what he said.
And he was with Michael Miller, right?
Yes.
And that he didn't make it to the bank, right?
Yeah, he said he missed his turn, so he didn't go to the bank.
He complains to you, Thomas Randolph, that you guys didn't find a large amount of cash that he had around the house, hidden around the house.
And even on him, that we didn't find the cash that he had on him.
Okay. And he was going to Utah the next day.
Yes.
You learned that Michael Miller had been involved in house-sitting for the Randolphs, right?
I know there was some contemplation of him house-sitting, even that Mr. Miller requested that a note or a note be given to him so that if anybody came by, he would be able to justify his being there.
Okay.
I don't know that he ever actually house-sat for them.
You said that there were chest compressions done. Do you remember saying that?
Yes.
Now, with regard to hiding identity in a mask, A mask is used by robbers, burglars, to hide their identity. Fair?
Yes.
If the intent is to shoot Sharon Randolph, you don't need to hide your identity from her, right? Because she's not going to live through this. So, isn't that right?
I don't know why he would have the mask on when he shot her.
Right. Other than he's committing a burglary.
Or he's shooting somebody he's very familiar with and he didn't want to have
foreseen.
I'm going to object and I'm going to ask the witness to be allowed to answer his, finish his answer.
Mr. Alvini, do you have an objection before you go on?
Sir?
Can you finish his answer?
He did finish.
Okay, I apologize.
To my knowledge, were you finished, Detective O'Kelly?
I don't know. We were kind of talking over each other.
Oh, I thought you finished. I apologize.
No, or that he is shooting somebody.
Detective? Could you answer my question?
Well, no. The ruling is that he gets to finish his answer.
And he said he was.
No, he never answered that question. Detective, had you finished?
I had not finished, Your Honor. We were talking over each other, and then Mr. Hamner said something, so I stopped talking.
Okay. What's the remainder of the answer,
Detective? Or that you're going to shoot somebody that you're very familiar with, and you don't want them to see your face when you do it.
Just in case when you die, you would be able to identify the person? Because if you're dead, if the plan is to shoot somebody dead in your own home, they're not going to be able to identify you later on. Right? Fair?
No, they wouldn't be able to identify you.
A lot of burglars wear masks. Isn't that fair?
I don't know.
In your experience, do robbers and burglars wear masks?
I would say robbers more often than burglars. Burglars go into places that are unoccupied and are likely not to be seen.
And there are lots of cameras that people have around, right?
More so now than then, yes.
And in fact, throughout your career, when a homicide happens, you go to neighbors, to businesses around there and look for cameras, right?
We did then, and now you're finding Ring doorbell cameras, you're finding all kind of surveillance cameras.
Mr. Randolph said it was the grossest thing he ever saw. It was the grossest thing he seen. It was gross, right?
He did, multiple times.
You've seen the pictures of Sharon Randolph's face.
Yes.
Right? After she shot, right?
Yes.
It's horrible, isn't it?
It is.
The wound to the back of her head is horrible, right?
It is.
You would agree with me that Thomas Randolph told you he loved her, right?
He told us he did, yes.
And that she was the best thing that ever happened to him, right?
Yes.
And that if Thomas Randolph came from holding hands with her and rolled her over and saw his wife looking like that, it has to be about as horrible as it can be in life. Isn't that fair? To roll your wife over.
I'd agree that everything you just said is one of the most horrible things I've ever heard.
You said that Miller had not obtained any criminal record in the whole 5 months that he'd been here, right? Whole 5 months he'd been here.
We didn't find a record on him.
But you know he committed murder while he was here, right?
He did.
And we know that he was stealing while he was here, right?
Again, we never spoke to the owner of the contents of that wallet that didn't belong to him. And we know that he had a cell phone that did not belong to him.
And we know that he had that beautiful ring in his left pocket that most certainly didn't belong to him, right?
I'd agree with that.
And that makes him a thief, doesn't it?
I do. I agree with that.
Now, I don't know if you know this, but in the boots, cowboy boots, did it have the name Philippe? Did you ever notice that?
I know there was writing on it. I don't know if it's
Philippe.
I don't remember that said.
You don't remember? Okay. Yeah. Do you remember whether Sharon Randolph had given Michael Miller those boots?
That was my understanding.
Now, with regard to those hallways, you said, strike that. There was absolutely no arrows put up on May 9th, May 8th, of arrows showing where all this matter was.
No, we didn't.
And your statement is that it was there, it just became more clear when you came back a week later.
Yes.
Okay, well, crime scene analyst Smith, right, he was there.
Yes, he was.
And it's his job to record and collect and preserve the evidence, right?
It is.
You don't want somebody coming in, hazmat coming in, and a whole bunch of these people, or one of them, or two of them, cleaning the area up, and then you come back when it's more visible. That doesn't make sense, right? It doesn't make sense to fail to preserve a crime scene or evidence from it if you can see it. Is that fair?
If you can see it, and you can document it, and you can photograph it, and you can recover it, yes.
And that was not done on either the 8th or the 9th, was it?
On that material on the upper wall, no. Or the two shell casings. We found them on the 15th as well.
Nothing further.
That upper material, did you observe it? Did you observe the cerebral fluid on May 8th and the early morning hours of May 9th?
No.
Okay, so if you had seen it, you would have documented it at that time.
Yes.
Let's go to the top. There was talk about, he indicated he was depositing money. During those interviews, does the defendant also say that he's trying to withdraw money as well?
Yes.
So he kind of, it's not equivocal. He kind of goes back and forth about whether he was depositing or withdrawing. Is that right?
Right. Moving money around. Yes.
But let's just assume he has all of this money on him. Does the defendant state that when he walked in the door, Michael Miller's waiting right there to blow him away?
No.
And just to be clear, Mr. Miller presumably abandoned the .38 that he killed his wife with.
Yes.
And then struggled to produce another weapon in relation to the defendant?
Yes.
At least that's according to the defendant.
It's according to one statement. The first statement, he said he had the gun in his right hand.
Okay. There were questions about, oh, you know, there's cameras and neighbors around. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. Typically, those cameras, where are they typically located? Are they located sometimes in the front of people's houses?
On the garage, on the doorbell camera, yes.
So if you were to exit out the garage, you'd have to open up the garage.
Yes.
And then walk out to all those cameras?
Correct.
And did the defendant say that was the direction of the garage, is the general area that Mr. Miller is walking towards when he encounters him?
That he was going towards the garage?
Yes.
Yes.
But there's a back door that was open?
Yes.
Lastly, there were questions about how the defendant indicated that you were asked. Didn't he indicate that Sharon was the best thing that ever happened to him?
Yes.
But he also indicated that he openly cheated on her.
Yes.
No further questions.
Anything else, Michelle?
No.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have any questions for this witness? You can write your question on a full sheet of paper with your name and your jury number.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process. From syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns, automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial. And up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.